become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MovieGeeksUnite, Facebook at facebook.com/MovieGeeksUnited, YouTube at youtube.com/MovieGeeksUnited, or bookmark our website at MovieGeeksUnited.net. And you can also access our entire library of programs, including more than 600 filmmaker interviews, right here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/MovieGeeksUnited. Thank you for tuning in to another exciting episode of Movie Geeks United's Art of Cinematography series. Tonight, we replay an interview we did in 2007 with cinematographer Larry Smith. Mr. Smith came on our show to discuss his experiences working for Stanley Kubrick on the film Eyes Wide Shut as his primary cinematographer. Prior to that film, he worked with Mr. Kubrick on The Shining and Barry Lyndon, in various technical positions. Since Eyes Wide Shut, Mr. Smith has shot films like The Piano Player, Fear X, Bronson, The Guard, Austin Land, and the new film Only God Forgives.
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Hi, how are you, sir? Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight.
No, my pleasure.
We've been so excited about speaking with you. Now, you worked with Kubrick on three pictures, like I just mentioned, starting with Barry Lyndon in 75, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So what expectations did you have of the man prior to meeting and working with him, and how did he surprise you?
Well, I first met him in 74, which was when I started to work on Barry Lyndon.
Mm-hmm.
I just went there for a week. They'd been shooting in Ireland, and he'd come back from Ireland, and they were resetting up in the south of England.
Yeah,
and in one of the stately homes that we shot in, and I was really only there for a few days, really, just to help out. It was a rush that he had come back. Nobody really knew he was back, and they had to get the sets ready and locations ready, etc. And so for me, it was just really a filling few days, and. And I didn't really know that much about him in those days. I mean, I knew he was a big, I knew he was a big director. He was a big name, but I didn't really know that much about him until, a few weeks into working on Barry Lyndon.
Yeah, he had we spoke to this a little earlier, but the way he was able to make films, the freedom he had, it was unprecedented, wasn't it? His relationship with Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any accident if you chart Stanley's career from the very early days. I think that I don't think it was necessarily premeditated, the working environment that he created for himself, but certainly film after film, and certainly when he moved to England, I think he was always moving towards being comfortable in the environment that he worked in, and comfort for him was being able to do what he wanted, when he wanted, in a relatively small geographical area, which he achieved.
Yeah, observing him, and this might be a completely obvious question, but being close to him and working so closely with him on some of these films, what did you observe as some of the qualities that made him such a phenomenon as a filmmaker?
Well, the first thing I guess I noticed, because as I said, I didn't really know that much about him, was that, his he's a gentle, you know, he's a gentle soul, Sal. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't someone that really stamped his feet and shouted and screamed. But he had a presence, almost mystical presence, really. You know, when he would arrive on the set, I mean, certainly the first time I saw him, when he came to look at some of the locations that we'd been lighting, you just felt that there was. There was this presence that he just sort of came in very kind of nonchalantly, but everybody was kind of sort of at attention, and looking and waiting for him to speak, waiting for him to, you know, say, you know, everyone was kind of slightly holding their breath in a way, in an extreme way, and that kind of surprised me a bit, and I kind of realized then very early on that he was highly respected by everybody around him.
Yeah, and he was so meticulous from what I've read, particularly in terms of the technical aspects of his films. I mean, the craft is always impeccable in everything he did. What was that collaboration like from a technical aspect with Mr. Kubrick?
Well, you're absolutely right what you say. I mean, you know, the term perfectionist has been used many times about Stanley, and it's certainly true the way he worked. I think Jan Harlan, his brother-in-law, once said, you know, the thing about Stanley is he looks under every stone.
Yeah.
And I would say, yes, he does look under it, or he did look under every stone, and then he'd go and look again in case he missed something, the fear of, in a way, of missing something. Did he let something go that he didn't really give it his full attention? And the time he would spend on anything, really, not even away from movies, because I was lucky enough to spend a lot of time with him in between movies. So you get to know, you know, not necessarily Stanley Kubrick the director, but more Stanley Kubrick the man, and almost, I could say, possibly friend in a way. And everything that he did, from, you know, whether it was working on a script, whether it was, you know, buying a telephone or, you know, a typewriter or pens or paper, whatever, it was, you know, there was a tremendous amount of research that went into every little detail.
Yeah, I recall reading accounts of that. He was, his endless curiosity and how he would investigate every, he was fascinated by so much. And that's part of what made him such a fantastic filmmaker, is that his fascination with every aspect of everything that he investigated. I want to talk to you a little bit about Shining, because obviously one of our great classic films of the past 27 years. Looking at Vivian Kubrick's documentary on the making of The Shining, it's really an unprecedented look inside his working process. And that's included in this special DVD set out on Tuesday. But it seemed like there were moments of great tension during that shoot. Was that a tense set?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think that certainly some of the scenes in Vivian's film polarized that a little bit. And there were certainly, you know, periods when it was very cold, and, you know, and there was a lot of noise and a lot of smoke, in particular on that one of the scenes I think you're referring to. And, you know, tempers get a little bit frayed from time to time. Walkie-talkies don't work, or messages are not conveyed. And I think, you know, the tension builds. There were moments like there are on every movie, but generally speaking, I would say... not so much, really. I thought it was I thought it was a reasonably relaxed film to work on.
Yeah. What did you observe of how he works and collaborates with his actors? That's a very close, intimate collaboration, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it is. I mean, he's very happy to give direction. He's also very happy to see what actors can give back to him. You know, he'll happily go along with, you know, a certain amount of takes, and then if it's not right, he may then step in and give a little more direction. But I think generally speaking, Stanley, for the most part, I mean, on that film in particular with Jack, I mean, you know, what direction do you give Jack Nicholson in a way? You know, I mean, you know, Jack would just you know, do it one way, do it another way. Stanley would say, try it another way. But, you know, it's very difficult to say to Jack, you know, that was good or that's not. So, but Jack always felt, I think Jack always felt from memory anyway, that he always felt his second or third take was, you know, probably the take that he would go for film after film. I seem to remember him saying that to me once, but still, we would still do 50 or 60 maybe on certain of the takes. So, but Jack was very happy to do it a different way.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it was Stanley's call. He wanted it a certain way. When he was happy with it, he walked away from it. But he would never walk away from it until he was happy.
Yeah. And what was he looking for when he – I know that some he did – some scenes he would shoot in – I read about Eyes Wide Shut. Some scenes he would shoot in 2 hours. Some scenes would take 3 weeks. But when he didn't get what he wanted and he was – using all of those takes, what quality was he looking for? Was he just looking for something to surprise him?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, I think Stanley said many times, really, really is good, but interesting is better. You know, and I think that, I think sometimes he didn't know what he was looking for, I'm sure, and sometimes he wouldn't know for a day or two, and sometimes, you know, he might shoot a scene and then look at it again in 3 or 4 weeks' time and think, you know what, that doesn't work. Doesn't work the way I wanted it, and he'd go back and do it. So I think, you know, what he was trying to achieve was obviously always the best possible take with all of the elements working all of the time. But sometimes there's so many elements in a scene that you don't always see them at that time. And you know, with hindsight, you can look back and say, well, I wish I'd have done this, I wish I'd have done that. A lot of directors obviously have to go with, you know, whatever they shot on the day. And Stanley had obviously this amazing way of working where he could look at something and go back and reshoot it, and did quite often.
Well, how did he approach you when it came time for Eyes Wide Shut? Was it just as simple as he wanted you to be his cinematographer, lighting cameraman for that piece?
Well, what had happened was about because after The Shining, I kind of went off and pursued other areas, you know, and so I didn't, you know, that was the point. I kind of lost contact with him for maybe 2 or 3 years. I'd get, you know, a Christmas card or whatever, but and then just when he was, I think he was in research with Aryan Papers, certainly with AI anyway, he just called me one day out of the blue, because I used to live for some time quite close to him, and oddly enough, all the time I lived there, I never, one of the times I saw least, one of the periods in my life where I saw sort of least amounts of time with him.
That makes sense.
He just called me one day and said, you know, I don't know, he just called me and we just started talking about something. And I seem to recall the conversation went on for about 4 hours, which seemed like 5 minutes at the time. But I mean, afterwards I put the phone in and I realized it was late evening. And he said, can you come up to the house? What's new? What's new in lighting? I said, well, there's a few little things that have come out. He said, come up, bring them up. Why don't you bring them up and show them to me? And I went up and we were in the projection room in his theater at his house in St. Albans. And we were just talking, really. I showed him these lights. I don't think he was that interested in these lights. No, they were interesting, nice little things. But we just talked, really, about movies and about, you know, what you've been doing, how are you? I hear you're a cameraman now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this went on late into the evening. We had some supper, sandwich or something, I seem to recall. And I went away. And then a sort of period of time went by. He didn't make Aryan Papers, he, I guess at this stage, was thinking about Eyes Wide Shut.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just got a call from Stanley again, which was a very long conversation. I was in my office, and we were just talking about, I seem to remember we were talking about a couple of movies that had come out at that time, which we talked about, and he was infused in about one of them, and And that was it. We spoke before. No talk about doing Eyes Wide Shut or anything else. He said, let's keep in touch. I said, yeah, fine. And then another 2 or 3 months went past, and he called me up, and he said, what are you doing? I remember I'd just gone to my office, and I said, well, I'm just going to the gym. And he said, the gym? What are you going to the gym for? I said, well, you know, he said, can you come over to the house? So I said, yeah, sure. So I went over to the house, and he, by this time, wasn't, he used to drive himself a lot in the early days when I knew him, and this time he wasn't driving himself so much, but this day, he said, come in the car, I want to take you somewhere. And he took me to a house, which was about 45 minutes drive from his house, and asked me about an exterior scene. And he said, well, how would you do this at night? You know, how would you light this at night? And I said to him what I would do and talk. We get in the car, we come back, we have a cup of coffee, I go home. Still no talk about that. And about another 2 or 3 weeks, I think, went past, and he called me up and said, would you be interested in Eyes Wide Shut?
Yeah.
And I sort of, in a way, it wasn't unexpected, oddly enough, because I kind of felt this was probably coming. So it wasn't a huge shock to me, but I just, having worked for Stanley on 2 films, on Barry Lyndon and The Shining, and knowing really what's required,
yeah,
in terms of body and soul, I didn't say yes immediately, which a lot of people find hard to understand, but I didn't say yes because I just, I had a, you know, I had my own career, and I was working as a DOP, and I had a company which I was running as well, and I just thought, I don't know how difficult this would be.
Yeah.
So I went away, and I said I'd speak to him in a couple of days, and I thought about it long and hard, and then I kind of came back, and I went down to see him, and we talked some more. And then I went away on holiday. I actually came to France on holiday and thought about it some more. And then we spoke again. And then in the end, I said, you know, that I would do it. It was a fairly long, drawn out process, and it had nothing to do with money, and it had nothing to do. And it was just about lifestyle and the commitment, really.
A major time commitment, the two.
And of course, I knew, having worked with Stanley on 2 movies. I mean, I just know the way he works. I know how long things take.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming from it. I was educated in the Kubrick way of working, which was why it took me so long really to say yes.
Yeah, I completely understand where you're coming from on that. We have a couple of questions concerning the look of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron, you wanted to ask something in particular, didn't you, concerning the look?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, because obviously one of the most interesting lighted scenes is the big Cruz Kidman bedroom scene where she confesses. And it seems as if Kubrick was going for natural lighting, in that he, you know, if you're in the family room and you got the lamps on and the overhead light on, this is the way it should look. Or in the bedroom, you got the lamps on and overhead light, this is the way it should look. It's just that it's so rare that bedrooms or family rooms or living rooms have ever looked that way in movies, that it looked, you know, like they were using extra wadded bulbs in the lamps and so forth. I mean, because there's even a point when Nicole Kidman is standing in the doorway and you can see what she's wearing, but you all can see the outline of her panties and her bra, and it's all because of the lighting. And so I was wondering what was his goal or what was his ambition for the lighting, particularly in like those interiors, whether it's the apartment or Sidney Pollack's party scene.
Yeah.
And because also, I would guess that Kubrick purposely picked the Christmas season for the setting also because it gave him interesting lighting choices. So that's kind of my curiosity. And what was his process?
No, I think so. I mean, I think that certainly when I first read the script, I immediately, it's very interesting when you get a script to read. You know, for me, it's either on the first couple of pages or it's not there. And it was very strange when you read the first page and it was actually set at Christmas and all that. And it, I don't know, it gives you a good feeling as a director of photography about the possibilities. So we, you know, obviously when we were testing this and looking at various ways of doing the scenes, the practical lighting. I mean, what you have to understand about the way Stanley worked was that he always wanted total freedom to move around the set. And you know, as you know, since The Shining, he used a lot of Steadicam.
Right.
And the Steadicam leads itself to being, you know, to being able to do 360 degrees. Well, you can't do that with a lot of conventional film lights, because at some stage you're going to be looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a way of devising a system where you get a very natural look by using natural sources, just slightly boosted natural sources, but not hugely, but just, you know, just basically. So you could use the actual, you know, lights on the set, which would be the inferior lights in a bedroom or in a kitchen or whatever, to give you an exposure, to give the camera flexibility to move around,
mm-hmm.
and just bring in the odd thing here and there, on maybe on a close-up, or light through the windows, which is, at the end of the day, and I've said this many times, if you think back to, you know, the way the great painters worked, they had two sources of light. They had daylight or they had candlelight. And what's changed, apart from now we use electric light instead of candlelight, the window lights are still the window lights. You still get daylight or sunlight or moonlight or whatever. So it's a very natural way of working if you actually think about it. The problem has been, obviously, has been able to get an exposure, you know, working at those kind of levels. And, of course, with modern film stocks and fast lenses, and also the way we shot that movie, because we force-developed everything two stops as well.
Yeah,
which gave us the opportunity to use low-level light sources but still get a reasonable stop in terms of focus.
Yeah, and didn't you also, you were investigating different film stock to use, and the one you decided upon was a discontinued
Kodak? Well, it was just being discontinued. It was a stock. I mean, what you realize is if you look at the history of Stanley's movies, the periods of time in between, especially the last, say, two or three, and I think the period of time between Full Metal Jacket and Eyes Wide Shut was the longest period that he ever went between making movies. And, you know, and in that 7 or 8 or 9 year period, a lot of things change. And Stanley doesn't work with film every day of his life. He's developing scripts, or he's working on some of his other movies. So the technical aspects, he wouldn't necessarily have been able to experience. And 5298, as I believe it was then, was a stock that I'd been using a lot anyway, and it was a stock that I personally liked. I didn't actually know it was being discontinued at that time. It wasn't until we decided on that stock, having tested other stocks that were out, that we realized this was the best stock that was on the market for force developing, because the other modern stocks of the same ISA speed were designed more for the modern era of post-production, et cetera, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and the over and under exposure range on that. Whereas 5298 wasn't quite like that, and it didn't give you too many biases when you pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just by default, we ended up using that. It just happened that they were discontinued it, and they were trying to push a new stock, the Vision stock, and we wanted a lot of it, and there wasn't a lot of it around. You know, I don't think there was too much in America. There was some in Europe, but they guaranteed that we would get it, and they made some more for us, I think.
Yeah, just two more quick questions for you, and then we'll let you go. The film seems to be showered in deep reds and blues.
Mm.
Was there a discussion thematically on how these colors fit into the story?
No, not really. I mean, I think that basically what happened, if you take, for example, the opening scene in the movie,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Tom and Nicole getting ready in the apartment,
right?
And in the toilet scene, it was something that evolved. I mean, it's something that if you see some of my work, I quite like those deep blues and warm interiors. And I think it was really a question of, let's test it, what should we do? Well, let's have a look at this. And then, you know, we'd do something, we'd put some blue in the window. And it's an exaggerated blue, for example. I mean,
yeah.
Moonlight is never that blue. I mean, it's really neutral.
Mm.
But that blue was so, it was almost theatrical.
Yeah.
And that really just developed by us looking at it, and we were saying, well, that's a bit blue. I might have said, that's a bit blue. And so I said, well, you know, it's a bit blue, but it's interesting. Why don't we just, you know, so it you know, it goes back to the realism thing, you know, what's real and what's interesting.
It is
not real, but it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a gorgeous-looking movie. Just watching it again recently, it has a fantastic look. Did you get a sense that he was happy with the finished film?
Well, you've got to remember, there's about at least a year in between me finishing on the project and Stanley finishing the cut. Maybe a little bit longer than that, actually. So I didn't see. I was working. So I never really got the chance to discuss with him, you know, the final cut, because as you know, he died shortly afterwards, and I hadn't spoken to him in that intervening time. But knowing Stanley, if he spent that amount of time and then he was prepared to show it to the Warner's people and Tom and Nicole in New York, he wouldn't have shown it if he wasn't happy with it.
Yeah.
That I'm convinced of.
Yeah.
And there is, you know, there's always conjecture about, did he finish it? You know, he finished it. That I'm sure of.
That's it for this episode of the Art of Cinematography series. You can find more episodes at moviegeeksunited.net/Art of Cinematography.